To ArtSpeak Radio Digest on CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio Vancouver, the Proximities Edition. My name is Bopa Chai. I'm the director curator of ArtSpeak, an artist-run center. I'm here in the office with my colleague Eric Hood, who is associate director at ArtSpeak. You were just listening to Bury Your Cowslip by Sydney Hermont, a new song with flute, guitar, and voice. Sydney says, "This is a spring blessing, as this particularly hot spring is now pulsing into summer." It was recorded and mixed by Sydney over the course of a week in late May, early June 2020. Sydney's album is due out later this summer. I'd like to begin with a land acknowledgement. We acknowledge that we live and work on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. Both ArtSpeak and Co-op Radio are located in the downtown east side in Gastown. In this time of increased online and remote programming, it's important to remember the local communities that make our work possible and ground our discussions. The recent struggles against displacement in our neighborhood and in the city cannot be overlooked. Over the past weeks, we have seen how COVID-19, the pandemic, has brought into sharp relief the stark inequalities within our communities and within our society. In May, the tent city at Oppenheimer Park, home to many, was evicted. Oppenheimer provided a space where many people who are without homes could safely distance during a pandemic. Oppenheimer Park provided a base for a community. Some of the members of the Oppenheimer tent city then relocated to Crab Park, to a car park owned by the Vancouver Port Authority. Namgans Tent City. On June 17th, Namgans was violently evicted. 76 supporters were arrested. Some of the people from Namgans then relocated to Strathcona Park. Over the past few weeks, echoing struggles against anti-blackness and police brutality in the U.S., the Black Lives Matter movement has held demonstrations directly related to Vancouver-specific issues and injustices. On June 13th and 14th, organizers and supporters of Black Lives Matter held down the access entry points to the viaduct. This location is historically significant given that the viaduct cuts through what was once the site of Vancouver's thriving black community of Hogan's Alley that was located between Jackson, Pryor, and Union and Main Streets. The Georgia Viaduct Replacement Project saw the removal of critical infrastructure of this community. Our acknowledgement that we live and work on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations is an acknowledgement that the eviction of Namgans Tent City and the history of Hogan's Alley is part of a history of white supremacy and settler colonialism that aims to erase the histories of communities of black, indigenous, and people of color in the city. As an artist-run center, we recognize and take responsibility for the role that ArtSpeak plays in supporting artists and practices that share in a vision that actively dismantles systemic oppression and inequality that disproportionately affects black people and indigenous people. While we've been working remotely, we wanted to find ways to remain connected to the neighborhood and communities surrounding ArtSpeak. Following the recommendations of the Downtown Eastside response to not visit the neighborhoods of Downtown Eastside and Chinatown, if you do not live or work in the area, we've decided to remain close to the public in order to keep our community safe. So with the temporary closure of the gallery, we've decided to renew a feature of ArtSpeak's programming of the past years, radio broadcasting. We're excited to continue to work with Co-op Radio for another edition of ArtSpeak Radio Digest. The first iteration of ArtSpeak Radio Digest ran in fall 2018 and was collectively run by Brady Cranfield, Gabby Dow, Emma Metcalf-Hurst, and Autumn Schnell, with support from myself and Eric Hood. With a mandate that encourages the dialogue between text, language arts, and visual art, we envision the show as an audio journal, as an expanded approach to our publishing program. So, located a couple of blocks from Artspeak, as many of you know, Vancouver Co-op Radio is a community radio station that has been based in the downtown east side since 1973. In this moment, where plans for social gatherings remain uncertain, we hope to share with you via Artspeak Radio Digest a series that will allow us to share space together in auditory proximity. So, in the true form of a digest over the next several weeks of the Proximities edition, we'll be hosting many exceptional artists, writers, arts workers, and musicians, all of whom work with sound, voice, publishing, and writing within their practice. These artists, these exceptional artists are Hannah Jickling and Helen Reed of Big Rock Candy Mountain, Christina Battle, Steve Hubert, Stephanie Ling, Sydney Hermont, Dashes and Barbara Lazara, amongst many others. So on tonight's show, and for the duration of Proximities, we're very excited to be introducing Hannah Jickling and Helen Reed of Big Rock Candy Mountain, who will be our guest resident on the show, presenting Bubble Broadcast. Each week they will be sharing their research as part of their Sleepy Soda project, which will develop a special edition of soda with grade 6 students in Edmonton, Alberta. Helen and Hannah will speak a little bit more about the project shortly. Following Hannah and Helen, we're also really very excited to invite Stephanie Ling to the show this evening. Steph has been in residence at Artspeak, living amongst our archive and library. So, I'll introduce Helen and Hannah quickly, and then, Helen Reed and Hannah Jickling have been collaborating since 2007 and are currently based in Vancouver on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. Through an interest in unconventional contexts, their projects prioritize collaborative research, elaborate antics, and a critical commitment to ways in which artworks are transmitted amongst publics. Their works take shape as installations, social situations, and events that then circulate as photographs, videos, printed matter, and multiples. Reed and Jickling were longlisted for the Sobey Art Award in 2018 and are recipients of a 2017 Mayor's Art Award for Public Art in the City of Vancouver and the 2018 Viva Award from the Chad Belt Foundation. So, thank you for joining us this evening, and we look forward to sharing this space of auditory proximity together over the next several weeks.
You're listening to Bubble Broadcast, or Sleepy Soda Number 1, in which we record the various sounds that come from carbonated drinks. This week, cherry-flavored San Pellegrino from a can might function like a deep relaxation track or as white noise to block the background out. These recordings are part of our current research for a new Big Rock Candy Mountain project, which will develop a special edition of soda with grade 6 students in Edmonton, Alberta in the coming year.
As Big Rock Candy Mountain, we've been researching taste and flavor with school-age children for about 6 years. We got interested in candy because it trades on disorderly conduct, chaos, and contraband. Candy is a point of youthful self-definition outside the bounds of adult tastes, and candy marketing does a really, really good job of addressing young people. We produce projects in public schools, mostly elementary schools, which are endlessly weird, disturbing, and fascinating public places. Schools are also a place where taste-making occurs, where certain values are promoted and others are discouraged. But what happens in between and around the classroom and corporate culture, and how are we able to critically riff within these structures?
For Sleepy Soda, Bubbles, or Effervescence in a Cup, recorded with a hydrophone, provides a long, drawn-out track that is constantly eventful, as in thousands of individual bubbles, each having their moment. But it's also dull. It's something to draw to if you have a drawing practice, a way to regulate the nervous system, or a track to put you to sleep. The idea of Sleepy Soda was coined by Deandra Oliver in a conversation about the sounds that pop makes.
We want to thank Brady Marks for a technical crash course in recording underwater, and Alyssa Ferrari and John Brennan for suggesting several artists working with liquids and sound. Thank you to ArtSpeak for inviting our participation, and to the Mitchell Gallery and the Edmonton Arts Council for supporting this forthcoming soda exploration. Other Sites has also been a long-standing supporter of Big Rock Candy Mountain.
And on to Sleepy Soda, number one.
Thank you.
You are listening to Bubble Broadcast with Big Rock Candy Mountain. This week we're listening to cherry-flavored San Pellegrino from a can.
Thank you. Are you a renter in Vancouver wondering how you'll be able to pay rent during the pandemic? Are you worried about rent debt or the possibility you might be evicted from your home? The Vancouver Tenants Union has your back. They have been very busy during the COVID-19 crisis, trying to effect legislative change that protects renters all over the city from rent debt, rent increases, and eviction. Find out how you can be involved by visiting their website at vancouvertenantsunion.ca or send them an email at tenantsunion.yvr@gmail.com.
Co-op Radio is your home for multicultural programming. We broadcast in over 8 languages, including Armenian, Amharic, French, Polish, Romanian, Spanish, Tagalog, and Vietnamese. We also host programs covering Hawaiian, Celtic, Caribbean, Jewish, and African music styles from across the globe. Want to hear programming in a language you speak? Co-op Radio can train you on the broadcast skills you need to start a new show. Go to cooperadio.org to learn more and contact us today.
I'm very happy to now be introducing Stephanie Ling, a writer, curator, who's been in residence at ArtSpeak, where she has been living and becoming well acquainted with our archive and library, wholesome content. Stephanie Ling is a producer of criticism, pamphlets, stories, essays, exhibitions, reviews, bluntness, anecdotes, shout-outs, wrestling storylines, proposals, applications, jokes, readings, minimal poems, poems, dinner, compliments, and diatribes. She works between Vancouver, unceded territories, and Toronto, where she is the artistic director at Images Festival. Her books are NASCAR, published by Blank Check in 2016, and Cuts of Thin Meat, Spare Room 2015. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Ling. I'm going to be reading some writing for the radio tonight. Very grateful to be invited by Bopa and Eric to share these texts that are not very broadly circulated, but often were written upon invitation to respond to artworks or to participate in projects. So yeah, really want to like appreciate the community that invited and supported these texts since they were written to today. The first text that I'm going to read is called Notes on a Seated Documentary at Goldstone. Goldstone is a Hong Kong-style cafe and restaurant on Kiefer in Columbia, and it's a place where many, many very important and challenging and fun and lengthy conversations and kinships have been built there. And it's very, I think it's a pretty important place to many of us who did a lot of our work at the various artist-run centers or had studios in the area. And I wish I could go there right now. And I'm really looking forward to when we can go there again. So this text was... It's published in an artist book called Other Colors. That's published by 221A, who invited me to provide a swatch based on my lived experience or cultural traditions and artistic practice. So I chose this color called Spam Couch, which is the color of the booth. The booths that they have at Goldstone. And of course, spam is a very integral ingredient to the breakfast and other things that you would eat at a Goldstone. So I'm going to read that text. Here we go. I was caught reading on a bench outside of a condominium by a local bookseller. At first, he didn't recognize me, but we commenced small talking at once when he realized that he'd placed his grocery bags down next to one of his regulars. Apparently, his intention for stopping was to take a few pictures of the cherry blossoms surrounding the bench. He remarked on their beautiful blooms as he saw them through the viewfinder of his camera phone. I agreed because it's true and difficult to resist their charms, though I try to for the same reasons I have an aversion towards conventionally attractive people. I asked him how things were at the shop, and he updated me. Sounded smooth and productive. When he finished documenting the blooms, he asked me what I was doing sitting there. It is not exactly the preference of people in my generation to be seen loitering outside of a condo reading the Communist Manifesto. I replied that Main Street is a bit of a runway. With an amused balk, he agreed. He picked up his bags, but before going on his way, he inquired about my reading material. I sheepishly raised the cover to reveal a fairly tasteful geometric composition. He said, "Nice addition, and see you later." Turns out we live a couple blocks away from each other. People need a place to go where they're not on display. I said, "Let's meet at Goldstone, and I want to sit in a booth." Coffee shops are weird, and I don't seem to like them as much as I used to because the style of the chairs started going back in time, while the customers were clean but lumpen and obviously anxious for some future. I'm not saying that time stands still here when I'm seated in a booth, but it is felt at a comprehensible speed, and nostalgia is optional rather than parcel to the dining experience. The host waves me over to a two-seater near the kitchen window, but Goldstone isn't busy right now, so I point to the booth behind it. I'm having an off week, and I wouldn't mind a U-shaped booth. I get a text informing me that she'll be 15 minutes late, but I don't mind. I don't mind because I have a U-shaped booth. I don't mind that she's 15 minutes late, even though I got here half an hour ago. Half an hour early, hoping for a solo soak in the temporary estate of a U-shaped booth, to stare interchangeably between a book, my phone, and into a cup of milk tea. I'm obsessed with the shiny milk tea oval on our cups, because reflected in them are the sustained expressions that people make when they come here for the first time and graze the litany of food items on the menu, which taunts indecisiveness from under a thick layer of glass that was wiped a bit too quickly. I know this battle of trying to hide being overwhelmed with options. It's a modern-day triumph to make a selection, to declare, "This is what I like. This is where I like to go." When she arrives, I have a book open on the table, but I look up from my phone and greet her with questions about the day as she unburdens herself of all her things, orders a milk tea, and informs me that she didn't have a hard day at work, but she works hard and her resilience is well documented. People need somewhere to go where they can start telling a story that becomes easily derailed when the person you're telling it to latches onto one of the minor details you include for context, and you let the story go and the conversation just meanders like an improv exercise. The point of the story was a complaint anyway. People need somewhere to go with an interior that facilitates enough distance so it's not rude if I don't come over and make small talk, if we happen to be here at the same time. The acoustics manage privacy without enclosure. When our food arrives, it is as unembellished as us. Not even a sprig of parsley that would indicate any given fucks. Our last priority is a dining experience. Here, we talk business, neighborhood, lasting and leaving love, and we are out of earshot of people we don't know or like, who also come here a lot. Versions of ourselves who went to management school and drive somewhere to drink bubble tea after an arena concert. There is no more pageantry reserved for the disheveled and unamused. Only U-shaped booths to ourselves on a slow night. Okay, thank you for listening to Notes on a Seated Documentary at Goldstone. The next text that I'm going to read is something that I wrote for Lucien Jury's exhibition at Neutral Ground called Phenomenal Hosts. And this is a text that was inspired by one of the sculptures in his show, which was a series of sculptures that were fashioned from things in around his mother's home. And so this object that he made was like this head. This head that was like paper mache'd with like this purple toilet paper. And the purple toilet paper had been a souvenir that he had brought home for his mother from France when he was like a teenager. And then he ended up, and I just thought it was like this interesting life cycle of this object, this quite kitschy object, which is really actually more like a kitschy material being fashioned into like this head, which to me kind of harkened to a more like classical form, whether as like the other works had this kind of more like assemblage like abstracted like quality to them. And yeah, I don't know, I just found that like, I found it very funny. So I wrote this text sort of as an homage to that sculpture, perhaps in particular. So I have a preface for the text, which is called Falling Tissue. And the preface is a poem, like a concrete poem. And the shape of the text kind of has this like descending quality to it, this descending form. And it says, all these guys high off of the disembodiment of modern art need to spend some time in their parents' basements. If you're from a city on the prairies, can you really claim to hail from vast swaths of yellow land? I've never been enveloped in any sort of picture, and I don't know anyone who comes from oil money, and I can't drive. My older brother says, you know, Steph, you're not a package that people pick up and drop off. I was visiting, and I wanted to be taken to the mall. Everyone I used to know owns a house. Homeowners are not really a category of people in my immediate life. You know, people who can pool their stuff into ranks of use value and use reserve. My friends who don't own homes but rent studios practice use reserve as material potentiality. My friend from the prairies just moved to the city, and recently she was getting ready to leave the apartment, and her new roommate and a few of their friends were in the living room making polite conversation while she was putting her shoes on. Her roommate lovingly described her as a minimalist to the others who were drinking from mismatched cups. My friend didn't seem to mind being considered a minimalist, but she could have mentioned that she simply left all her stuff in her parents' basement. We're all stupid little packages just trying to get from here to there. It sounds better than baggage, which is a cumbersome accessory to some sort of putative state of suffering. A package waits for a ride, and beneath all that brown paper and tape is an inventory of habits, a bubbling pile of the long game routine. At times, this package is a high traffic area, but there is always room for alluring foam peanuts that look sweet to taste because they are very resolved in shape and content with their role as negative space takers and positive space makers, sparing us the stuff of awkward spatial silences. The space for rattle. And if you don't occupy that space, someone or something will lease it from you. Acquisition is fueled by the pleasure of accessing potentiality without expiration, but I deeply regret my CD collection. Let's say I get dropped off, and they open me up. What I shoved in there, between the peanuts, are some configuration of low lighting reserved for attempts at awkward seduction. A banked back-the-fuck-up moment somewhere. I'd like to take it out for a spin someday soon. My disdain for the bald tissue inside every new pair of sneakers. The things I say when hearing what I'm saying without being able to stop myself from saying it are swirling around with ongoing shame and the possibility of revision. The promise of art, the pinky swear, and the broken pinkies of art. I save them all in this package that wants to get dropped off at the mall. My CD collection was an unspoken contest between my brother and I, and I'd say we both lost, but he won my respect for his dutiful completionism and competitive connoisseurship. If he was a package who wasn't so keen to transport itself, I'd at least walk him to the bus stop. I know home is supposed to be where the heart is, but whenever I think about moving to another city, the deliberation inevitably crosses the question of, what about all my stuff? My parents think I'm materialistic, but not high maintenance. I know, because when I asked my dad, he said, no, but you do have a lot of stuff. Home is where my stuff is might have a more honest resonance with most people. No, but you have a lot of heart would have been nice too, but it doesn't seem to relate to the question of high maintenance. Stuff seems ostensibly connected to happiness. I've heard that there are places in the city where people just leave their front doors unlocked, and if I pick the wrong place in the world to live, I might lose all my shit, and I won't know how I feel about that until it actually happens. We're always trying to get away from, or back to, our stuff. I don't know if I can identify much material potentiality in my regrettable music tastes, adolescent acquisitive impulses, and sibling rivalry aside from being shiny and round, but so is the sun, M&Ms, bald heads on a sunny day. I wish we could eat my CD collection, but instead we could ball it up and shove it inside a pair of shoes, new or old, and call that a proposition for meaning. The urge to shove things together that don't make sense is requisite to becoming a phenomenal host. They who orchestrate that remarkable shock when the dust settles in the aftermath of a restless union of seemingly incompatible lovers. I'll say, isn't that amazing? Amazing. The impressed foam peanut. Your reply is, I don't know, I wasn't there, but I wasn't so bewildered to forget to find a souvenir from my trip given to you wrapped in that tissue that came with my new sneakers, the first pair in a long time. Thanks for listening. That was just a reading of notes on a seated documentary at Goldstone, followed by a reading of another text called Balling Tissue. So stay tuned to ArtSpeak Radio Digest Proximities. There'll be one more reading coming up shortly. Thanks.
The DTES Response Fund supports COVID-19 rapid response efforts for the 15,000 people at risk in Vancouver's downtown East Side. Your financial donation helps cover food, hygiene products, cleaning supplies, transportation, and telecommunications. All donations are being received by the Network of Inner City Community Services Society and will receive a charitable tax receipt. Visit their website at dtesresponse.ca. That's dtesresponse.ca.
Hi, we're back on ArtSpeak Radio Digest. If you're just tuning in now, my name is Stephanie Ling. I'm a writer and a critic and an arts worker, and I've just been sharing some texts that I wrote a couple years ago and haven't really been broadly shared, so it's very cool to have the opportunity to share them tonight through ArtSpeak Radio Digest. So yeah, much love and respect to the wonderful humans who work there, Bopa and Eric. So I just read a text called Notes on a Seated Documentary at Goldstone, which is about a young woman who is spotted reading the Communist Manifesto by a local bookseller, and then is later decompressing with a friend at the much beloved establishment, Goldstone in Chinatown. And then following that, I read a text called Balling Tissue, which is somewhat of a meditation on materialism, I suppose. So the next text that I'd like to read tonight is called The Theory Section, which was written to accompany a film by Dan Starling called Sans Sans Soleil, after Chris Marker's Sans Soleil. So instead of a film essay on Tokyo and Guinea-Bissau, Dan's film is a film essay about Vancouver, at least depicting Vancouver. And I wrote the theory section because dense film edits together footage of individuals reading in their homes or in public spaces alone, along with sessions in a Walter Benjamin reading group, and then footage of crowds, not necessarily political crowds that are gathering for a revolutionary purpose, but crowds like 420 gathering at the art gallery when it was at the art gallery, and then fireworks on July 1st. But I identified, when I think about Vancouver, I think about it as like this place where there is a lot of theory, but not a whole lot of practice. And so therefore no praxis, which is ironic because I feel like there's like the highest concentration of like secret Marxists in any art community that like I've experienced. Not that I have like a whole ton of range of experience of art communities to draw from, but I do think that it is pretty unique to Vancouver, especially since I've been like spending time in the ArtSpeak apartment where the archive is. Like there's like this history of like really labor-oriented poetry, this is the thing I discovered very recently since I started staying in the apartment after I became sort of stranded here after COVID. And then in thinking about some of these texts, and thinking about like my relationship to the city after having not lived here for about 2 years, I realized that like I was writing them 2 years ago, and they're in a way like in a way it's difficult. I think it's very difficult to be critical of Vancouver because it's actually so easy to be critical of Vancouver in the sense that like you just don't really end up saying anything at all. And those that are close to me know that I'm basically obsessed with doing things the hard way. So what's the hardest way to be critical of Vancouver, a place that is so easy to criticize, is to, I don't know. I guess like write about it in a way that, that implicates like myself in the city or like in the community. The community, especially the arts, like artists or like the artist run community or the cultural sector, makes it and has been a very difficult place to express political desire, especially I think in the time, and I'm realizing now when I wrote this text, that was a frustration of like kind of always being like crossing the threshold of participation back and forth, and even wondering why there is a threshold, because our communities, or at least the art communities, like many, many organizations operate out of the downtown east side, where the most marginalized people in our city are like hyper visible to so many of us who had continued to channel our political desire into intellectual projects. And of course, the threshold of participation has become an incredibly high traffic area over the last few months. And I guess like I am really interested to, I'm more than interested to see where this like newly forged, like, and very action-oriented participation will land us, those who were born and lived in the theory section, raised in the theory section, are now participating, and like power to them, power to all who are answering the calls to action, but you know, want to remember that like for so long there was a refrain And there were people doing that work for decades and decades before us. And I guess I just really don't want to be a blip on their radar. I don't want any of us with our newfound desire for political participation to be a blip on the long revolution. So maybe I'll just leave it there and start reading the theory section. When doing jumping jacks in unison, try to focus on syncing with your comrades. My hair, like straw, my bangs blunt, the ends keep stabbing me in the eye. A bundle of needles dropping in and out of my field of view like an ecstatic child on trampoline. They see me wincing, but eventually I just close my eyes and hope that my arms and legs extend and contract in a fashion that won't diminish my commitment to the revolution. The next day, we had arranged to meet in the theory section. She asks, "Did you sleep okay?" People always assume we're students because we wear backpacks and appear to be charmingly disheveled, depressed, or sleep-deprived. We should really inquire about a student discount. Did I sleep okay? No. I believe in aesthetics, but I died for the revolution. No. I have a constant feeling that something is going to happen, that something will be said, but it never gets said. No. I dreamt last night that my bangs were against me. No. I dropped my phone in the toilet yesterday. She doesn't really get the connection, so I gesture towards explanation, but then she does something like language with her face and her head that indicates that I don't have to. Why do we keep meeting in the theory section? We're laying it on a bit thick. I mean, truth should be regarded as an attempt to reproduce experience synthetically, right? A rhetorical question that she brandishes well. A full stop, bejeweling her diatribes with implicit consensus. Right, because we're addicted to citation. No original thought is permitted unless it's been jettisoned a generous distance from citation, but born within a blend of citation, nonetheless. You're good, trust me. I hate being good. Okay, then you're bad. Yeah, you tell me what I want to hear. Yeah, because you're never happy. I just need to read more. Lay the book down and look up that Latin phrase which means, thus passes the glory of the world. A Latin lesson which turns into thumb skating over the surface of her new phone, looking at pictures of her friends, overcome with the feeling of, all my friends are geniuses, and therefore she too is a genius. Our theory is without citations, so then it's either religion or poetry, but we'll be raking all bodies of work and machines for answers, if not truth, and everything, in all squares, gymnasiums, beaches. Around tables and chairs are conjecture grafted onto the surfaces of reason, rhyme, and design. We exercise a healthy skepticism of images, especially of togetherness, so we consign ourselves to messy articulation and fevered parataxis. Fingers crossed for a plagiarism of life, at best. It's a cliche to be seen alone reading Joyce because he looks like a guy doing his MFA or is thinking about it. He doesn't really look woman in the eyes and pauses periodically to write notes. He is marked with delusions of literary grandeur. This uninspiring, self-reflexive lunch break is almost over, though, and no poems were written, no plots devised, no intellect weaponized. When he finds his corner of the crowd, there he is in unscripted glory. Landing squarely on the shoulders of underdogs and prodigies, most of us reading and working where we go, with whom we go, are not underdogs or prodigies. We are not scholars or inherently interesting images. Once our images enter circulation, we are, like stock footage of passing conifers lining the road trip, images of low-hanging fruit. We do not fuel fascination, but we become exceptional because we can hide in plain sight. You couldn't pick the students out of the crowd, the enrolled, the subscribed, the collective, out of a crowd of people who are just here for an A-OK time. But even if you could, you can't fascinate the institutionalized with powers of observation devoid of citation. I just think that if you don't get it, you'll never get it. Another breed of fancy full stop. But how then can you really care if anybody gets it or gets what it means or if it improves them? Improves them for what? For death. Why hurry them along? Too many poets act like a middle-aged mother trying to get her kids to eat too much cooked meat and potatoes. I don't give a damn whether they eat or not. The last coup he planned was interrupted by an impromptu study session. Earlier that year, he had overheard a discussion happening in the theory section between two students. He seemed to be prone to mishearing things in spite of his commitment to eavesdropping. He liked the sounds of Radical Patience, and he especially liked the sound of it as an accompaniment to his crinkled paper where a plot hummed. He read that every customizable configuration is an imperfect plagiarization of life. Thus asses the glory of the world. I just think that if you don't get it, you'll never get it. Victims of salt baths and massages are bald before their time, and the alcohol, steam, and Turkish bath fiends die young. Sic transit gloria mundi. I get that glory won't descend upon the reading, drinking, steaming, bathing, but a Latin phrase as fancy full stop feeds me a pause. A pause filled with the hot air rising of, think about it, or look it up, but nicely, because I want to know, just in case I need it later. Wanna go? Just a sec, I want to see if that book on hashish is still here. Oh yeah, it's not here. I thought you had that one. No, that's a different one. I must be thinking of someone else. Oh, really? Who else? You know. Oh, yeah, he would. I've been seeing it more in secondhand bookstores lately. I'll just be patient. I really regret not getting it when I saw it last time. Why didn't you? I don't know. I was trying to be good. The knees crack when we climb a ladder in search of a critical text and better reading habits. The knees tell us that we're due for a lap around the mall where I'll get a cheap new phone before we join the others. I'll be loosening my spear, my point, and trying not to cut myself on my fringe, which is never sheets and always in plain sight. We're off to go make fun of people whose outfits are too nice to sit around and not talk to anyone. Somehow, this passes for the glory of the world. So, that was a reading of the theory section, prefaced by a minor diatribe. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Stephanie Lang. And hopefully, I'll be running into or seeing you soon, when it's safe to run into people, as one does in Vancouver. Anyway.